This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge the ongoing connection to land, waters, and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing processes that still continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded, and this always was, and always will be, Aboriginal land.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Auspol Snack Pod Quarantine Edition. We are the official podcast of the Auspol Shiphosting Facebook group, and we are a podcast where we talk about news and memes and stuff. If you're new, welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Zach LeSnack, and with me is my... I was going to say erstwhile co-host, but you've told me that's not what it means.
Yeah, we actually got... I said erstwhile on the show like 6 months ago, and we got a caller, or, you know... internet age equivalent. Someone messaged us to be like, hey, erstwhile actually means former, not like embattled or respectable or whatever. I don't even know what I thought it meant now. But
yeah, I guess I kind of thought it meant like reliable.
Yeah. Anyway, I am kind of your erstwhile co-host. We've been co-hosting for a while, so I was formerly your
former,
once
and current,
future co-host.
And future co-host.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Noon. I'm sorry to get into that long-winded intro without introducing myself. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show.
We want to say thank you to a few special people, Jess, Robbie, Charlie, and Isabel, who signed up to our Patreon. Thank you very much. So that means that we have hit our first patron goal, which was 50 patrons.
Yeah.
And we promised when we'd do that we would release a short run of bonus episodes of Noon and the Dunce, where Noon explains Marx's theory to me via the medium of obscure memes. So expect that in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to start putting those out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And also, we just wanted to say thank you to our shadowy financier. We got a new shadowy financier it's two shadowy financiers. So we're not going to shout them out by name. I'm going to keep it shadowy, but you know who you are, and thank you very much. We appreciate it so much. It's so cool.
Along with our correction about what erstwhile means, last week we actually got several people who wrote to me to tell me that PSOs are not ticket officers, which is something that I said last week in a kind of offhand way. PSOs are protective service officers, and they're kind of like failed cops.
They're train station cops.
Yeah, and they're also used in other situations, so I'm pretty sure some guards in prisons are also PSOs and that sort of thing. Anyway, they're different than the actual ticket officers, even though PSOs do have the power to check tickets and fine people for not having tickets. So I'm very sorry for conflating these two different, subtly distinct armed enforces of ticket law. Thank you, everyone, for letting me know that that was completely wrong.
This is a terrible apology. And yep, there is a difference. Ticket officers don't carry guns. PSOs do. And I think that's a pretty important distinction.
Yeah.
Fuck, I hope I'm not wrong about that. All right, let's get into our entree. What have you brought for us to snack on this week, Noon?
So this is a story that I am very excited to tell everyone about. This is a Facebook page that I've been following for a couple of years named Penny's Voice. And I know a lot of other people who listen to the show are also following it on Facebook. This woman, Penny, which is not her real name, was raped 2 years ago. Basically had a really absolutely awful experience going to court. The magistrate said a bunch of super fucked rape apology stuff and was saying it was her fault and all this other stuff.
He said that she had buyer's remorse and that she couldn't profit off her own malfeasance.
Yeah.
Which is
super fucked. And this has had a number of other complaints against him, which are now being investigated, in part because Penny went to VOCAT, which is the Victims of Crime Assistance Tribunal, which is sort of not exactly the same as a criminal case, and was awarded $10,000, which is the maximum amount that you can be awarded at VOCAT. Which I think, you know, the money was basically secondary to her to having her experience sort of like acknowledged and seen and appreciated and being told that it was real and that it was awful. And also, as I said, now it seems that there's an investigation into the shitty magistrate who basically completely dealt with the case terribly. Just for one example, she was blackout drunk and is not legally able to give consent in that situation. And that's something that the second magistrate acknowledged that the first one didn't. So anyway, that's just so lovely. Penny has been having a real fucking shit time for the last couple of years trying to deal with this, and it's just so amazing that she got the recognition that she needed. So
there you great go. Nice to start with a little bit of good news. I mean, obviously it is
horrible news.
It's awful, but that she had to go through
yeah.
not only that experience, but then our terrible justice system, which we discussed last week, is just totally incapable in most cases of delivering any kind of justice for victims of sexual assault. But that's a good result.
Yeah.
Focus on that. That's great.
Cool.
Cool. Moving on, something probably not so great, I would argue.
Yeah, yeah.
Fashy Australia.
How could something not great come after that delicious and refreshing sting?
Well, let me tell you. So this is, we're going to be talking about the raid on the Hares and Hyenas bookshop in Fitzroy. So that's an LGBT bookshop in a relatively ritzy part of Melbourne. And last year, cops raided this place looking for somebody who they say committed a home invasion and a carjacking. And they basically kicked down the door of the apartment that is sort of adjoins this LGBT bookshop. They, according to the entrance, didn't announce themselves as cops. They burst in, and one person who was sleeping in the apartment thought that it was an anti-gay home invasion, and so he ran away from the cops. And he was then violently arrested. His arm was viciously broken in several places, and he suffered huge amounts of bruising from being thrown in the footpath. This guy's name is Nick Demopoulos, so he's a Greek-Australian guy. And another element of this story is that the cops said that they were looking for someone of Lebanese appearance. So aside from the potential prejudice of knowing that the people in this apartment were probably part of the queer community, there yeah. seems to have been a kind of racial element of to this as well. So pretty soon, so obviously this was not the guy they were looking for. He was completely unrelated. And he's being referred to as, you know, an innocent man in a lot of the reporting around this, which is obviously true, but
sort of misses the point, like almost. It's, like,
yeah,
calling him innocent
kind of
implies that he might not have been innocent or something like that. Like, he is a complete bystander who had nothing to do with it.
Exactly. And yeah, not innocent in the sense that the cops thought he committed a crime and then arrested him. They just, like, burst in and, like, just absolutely beat the ever-living shit out of him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, emphasizing that he's innocent, I think, also implies that somehow this violence would have been justified had he not been, quote-unquote, innocent. Which, like,
yeah.
So, you know, some of the reporting around this has been pretty disappointing in that respect. But anyway, so this happened about a year ago. And there were calls for an independent investigation by the independent broad-based
anti-corruption commission, yeah,
IBAC, in Victoria, as opposed to having the cops conduct an internal investigation. So when IBAC said, "Yeah, well," when the case did go to IBAC, people were like, "Okay, this is good," and they've just released their findings and basically found that the cops did very little wrong. Which is obviously deeply frustrating. And Nick Demopoulos himself has said that he's, like, deeply disappointed by this decision. So he's been going through, a year's worth of physical therapy trying to heal after intense surgery on this, like, completely destroyed shoulder fracture.
The shoulder injury was the worst that he'd ever seen, and it looked like he'd been in, like, a really bad car accident. And the x-rays of it are just, I mean, I don't know what x-rays are supposed to look like, but you can tell it's not meant to look like that.
Yeah, the just level awful. Of violence that we're discussing here is
not to mention the, like, extreme psychological suffering that he's been going through, presumably of, like, being terrified about sleeping at night and so, like, I mean, I can't imagine how I would recover from it if that happened to me.
The trauma of that experience and, like, yeah, I mean, he literally thought that he was going
about to be murdered
to be
by neo-Nazis. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So, just an absolutely horrible situation. And yeah, the IBAC has come back and basically said, I'll read this quote from one of the IBAC commissioners. He said, Ibeck found the force used by police in restraining Mr. Demopoulos was not disproportionate to the officer's objective of arresting Mr. Demopoulos, as the police involved reasonably believed such force was necessary to arrest a person who was struggling with police. So, yeah, this is what happens if you are considered to be resisting arrest. Then the cops are allowed to basically give you permanent bodily damage that is okay, apparently. So that's what we're learning. They did find that the cops violated his human rights because they didn't tell him why he was being arrested, tell him his rights, or officially release him from custody. So they, like, literally just fucking burst in, put this guy in cuffs, threw him to the ground, and took him away. Didn't tell him anything. So this is obviously a very disappointing result from IBAC, and I think another example of just... I guess there was a little bit, people at the time were like, there should be an investigation into the police's actions around this. The cops shouldn't investigate themselves on this. We need to have an independent investigation. And then that's what happened. And then yet again, another of our institutions has proven itself to be totally incapable of standing up to the police or like finding another institution culpable for its horrible actions. So it's very disappointing. Yeah. A lot of the commentary around it as well, like the Victorian Police Minister, Lisa Neville, like spent a good chunk of her statement about this just thanking the police. Like,
awful. Such an inappropriate way to respond.
What the fuck kind of response is that to this? Like, just absolutely absurd. So get all the way fucked off, Lisa Neville.
Lisa Neville does have a bad take, but I think we've actually got a blurst take, Zach. Is that right?
We do have a blurst take, so let's play that sting.
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
So this is a statement from the head of the Victorian Police Union, which is called the Police Association Victoria. This guy's name is Wayne Gatt, and he's a bit of a known person around the traps, pretty outspoken.
And as the head of the police union, his main job is to come out and make absolutely awful statements about police brutality and violence, and so here he is in fine form.
Yeah, it's such a fucked up thing for like, because like he's in this position where basically he has to frame these incidents as like defending workers from their bosses or media or whatever.
The police union isn't really part of the union movement as a whole, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm not saying they're not a union in a technical sense, but like they never talk about workers' rights or industrial relations or whatever, because cops aren't subject to the same kind of like governmental, you know, fucking with workers of various sorts that people in other industries are. The entire point of the police union is to protect police from the consequences of their actions.
Totally. Including the consequences that might come from within the police department.
Totally.
So when this first happened, the VicPol very quickly apologized to Nick Demopoulos. They issued an official apology, and Wayne Gatt came out at the time and was like, how dare you apologize to this guy? You're implicitly accepting that the cops did something bad here, and we need to wait for the results of the findings. And now that the findings have come out, he's released this just incredibly fucking smug statement on behalf of the cops union. So I just wanted to read a few quotes from this. And Noon, if any of this makes you kind of angry, just feel free to interject at any point. So he says that the IBAC findings are, quote, sober reading for those who judged the cops prematurely.
I'm already angry.
Behalf prematurely. So there's a direct dig at VicPol. And this is what I'm saying. It's like he's like feels like he has to defend the quote unquote members of the police association from VicPol itself. So that's the kind of like employer-employee relationship that I'm talking about. Sure. Not exactly workers' rights, you're right. The only matter IBAC has chosen to criticize are concerns relating to a technical breach of human rights. So,
I mean, that is enraging, cool. But it is definitely accurate.
Yeah, I love that just locking someone up and throwing them to the ground and not telling them anything about why it's happening is just a technical breach of human rights.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's just a small matter when you think about it.
A soupçon of human rights abuse.
Just a little sprinkling. Our members responded to this incident because every bit of information at hand in a dynamic situation pointed to that premises containing a violent offender. They were trying to apprehend this offender to keep us all safe. So, a couple things there. Demopolis wasn't an offender, so definitely kind of implying that he was there with the wording. And also, who are you keeping safe, sorry? Because all that's happened here is just a completely random member of the public has been...
assaulted and kidnapped.
Viciously assaulted.
I keep saying kidnapped, by the way, because as we understand it, the police didn't formally arrest him or tell him that he was under arrest or anything like that. So it's just a kidnap. They would in uniform, but it's a kidnap. Yeah.
Yep. He goes on to say that the members in question have had to wait a year for this. Almost a year.
Wow.
So, yeah, like, it's a really, like, the wording of this is so...
tear-jerking.
So kind of... not even tear-jerking. It's just, like, it's so fucking self-righteous.
Yeah.
And then he ends by saying, tonight or on any other night, these members will be called upon to put themselves between high-risk offenders and the public, and they will. We hope they will do so with more support and less judgment. So, fuck off, Wayne
Cool.
Gatt. That's probably the blurst take floating around about this. Deeply frustrating stuff. the other thing to kind of note about this is just quickly before we move on, is the particular cops involved. So this is the CIRT, the Critical Incident Response Team here in Victoria.
Which are the riot cops, yeah?
Yeah, so they kind of, they're not exactly like a SWAT equivalent. That'd probably be more like the Special Operations Group or the Soggies, as they're known, which is a very cool nickname. They call themselves the Sons of God, if you are interested.
The CIRT do?
No, the Soggies.
Oh, the SWAT, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Sons of God. So they're, gotcha. They're close to a SWAT team. So the CIRT team is basically supposed to be a team equipped with, like, quote-unquote, less than lethal methods of de-escalating situations. And they kind of are supposed to respond to, like, hostage situations and that kind of thing. They actually spend a majority of their time responding to mental health related call-outs, so yep. Which is obviously very upsetting that we've got this, like, heavily armed squad of cops in full body armor, like, they look terrifying, showing up to, like, deal with situations where people with some kind of mental health issue are, you know, causing a danger to themselves or others. So that's horrible. But they've been just involved in fucked incident after fucked incident. So this is one in a long
line of... they
were the
ones clearing out the homeless people from Flinders Street last year.
Is that right?
Yeah. And
fucking hell.
Similar public operation sort of things.
Yes. They also shot and killed a couple in a nightclub because...
that's right.
One member of the couple was wearing a fake gun as a part of a costume, which they were told.
Were they killed? I thought they were shot and badly injured and then sued the cops.
Oh, perhaps they weren't killed. Maybe they were just shot.
But they were, like, having sex in a sex club, clearly not shooting anyone, and got shot. Yeah.
Yeah. And a whole bunch of other really bad stuff. So this, like, they've got a, like, terrible internal culture as well, apparently. Anybody speaking out about, like, how badly the unit is run or the terrible safety the safety errors that are happening in training exercises and stuff basically get excommunicated from the unit. So look, point is, cops are bad. These particular cops are extra bad and extra incompetent, and maybe we should stop sending them to deal with these situations, because all they do apparently is make things worse and hurt completely unrelated citizens. The one thing I wanted to mention before we get off this topic is that Nick Demopoulos' friends have started a GoFundMe, which we're going to post a link to in the show notes. And one other thing you can do if you want to help out the people who were victimized by the cops in this situation is to potentially buy some books from Hares and Hyenas, which is the LGBT bookshop involved.
Say hi to
in
my
the,
friend
the
Ed,
situation.
Who works there.
Maybe don't go in, but...
oh, yeah.
Send an email. Yeah.
Well, why don't we move on from this heavy and unpleasant subject to the global pandemic?
Oh, excellent. That'll be refreshing. I wonder if we have some kind of lighthearted sting that might help us smooth over the tonal whiplash of this transition. Hey, man, I got some more beers.
Oh, I don't know if I can drink anymore. I'm feeling kind of sick.
No, come on, we're having another round of Coronas. No, we just have that one. Oh, well,
no.
That's okay.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So this is our segment where we do a little bit of an update on what's going on with Corona stuff. And as always, you know, we are recording once a week and our show comes out the next day. So if you want like up to the minute legal advice about what you are and aren't allowed to do, this is probably not the source, but we are going to touch on some things. So this week, Scott Morrison announced that the current restrictions will stay in place for at least 4 more weeks. That's sort of the big news. Because up until now it's been open-ended, and now they're really looking at trying to slowly lift those restrictions. So those restrictions are things like social distancing measures, so like not being able to hang out in groups, businesses being closed or operating differently, schools mostly being done by distance or homeschooling and so on. So those are the sort of things that are going to be continuing. And it's not that after those 4 weeks, the restrictions are just going to be lifted immediately. There are 3 things that the government and the, you know, health departments and so on are looking for that will allow us to start lifting the restrictions. And those 3 things are broader testing, better contact tracing, and the ability to contain outbreaks. Let's go over those in a very small amount more detail because they're pretty self-explanatory, but the broader testing, is mostly going to be what's called, sentinel surveillance. Which basically means picking a couple of hospitals in various different areas, and those hospitals are going to do like much, 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 much more intense testing. So they might test anyone who has any kind of like lung-related symptom, for example, or they might test anyone who comes into the emergency department at one hospital in Sydney or something along those lines. And the idea is that these sentinel locations will then give us a much, much better sort of understanding of what's going on, if there's a bunch of cases that aren't being found that are unsymptomatic or whatever, and the data that we get from those sentinel surveillance will then be able to decide what further testing regimes we might end up doing. So yes, that's probably going to end up being rolled out in the next week or two, those sentinel surveillance, so watch this space. But the broader testing is probably not going to be like random civilian testing. Like in South Korea, there were people out on the streets like pointing laser temperature things at people's heads, and if they were had a temperature, then they got tested for COVID. And it's unlikely that that's going to happen in Australia. So the next thing that needs to happen is better contact tracing. And there's not a huge amount of detail in this other than we're going to do it better. And so contact tracing, to be clear, is someone has a case, a confirmed case of coronavirus, then we need to figure out literally everyone they've spoken to for the last 2 to 4 weeks, and everyone that those people have spoken to, and everyone that those people have spoken to, and that sort of thing. And so at the moment, this is kind of the main job, I think, that the health departments are doing. The bureaucrats, that is, not the health workers, of course. And so it looks like there might be more funding or potentially a new sort of temporary agency kind of set up. I don't know if they're going to hire private investigators or what's going to go on. And another idea here is some kind of phone app that will surveil the movements of citizens and tell the government if they've been hanging out with a bunch of people when they shouldn't be, or that sort of thing. There's been a bunch of discussion on the AusPol Shitposting Facebook group this week about this app, and about how it's unfeasible and how it's invasive and unethical, both of which are completely true. So, yeah, but there's not really much detail from the government yet about what the app is going to be or how it's going to work or how opt-in/opt-out it's going to be. So, again, watch that space.
The Australian government is famous for rolling out extremely effective technological measures. You know, things like a census or something collecting your health information or whatever. Very good at respecting data privacy as well. Mm-hmm, I personally didn't see anything that could go wrong there.
No. And there's no way that GPS tracking could be used to target vulnerable people or any kind of security problems with this app. It's going to be fine. Okay.
Even if you could, we definitely don't have a government who is interested in doing that with every ounce of its being. So.
No.
Yeah, cool. What else is happening with Corona?
The last thing is the need to be able to contain outbreaks. And this is basically just like we need a game plan for when outbreaks happen. Because as restrictions lift, there will be more outbreaks. That's basically unavoidable because we don't have a vaccine, and that's just how diseases work. So as restrictions lift, there's a 90% chance that we're going to have at least small outbreaks. So, you know, a school goes back and then a bunch of people connected to that school are going to get it and that sort of thing. And so the idea behind this one is that we need to have like a solid game plan for as soon as we get like the second case connected to a school, everyone knows what they need to do. They need to call the principal. They need to go and find everyone who's enrolled. They need to check the roles of who was there that day. You know, like, I'm just making that up. But the idea is that we need to know in advance how we're going to deal with it when the outbreaks come out. Yeah, so that's the three-point plan and the restrictions after 4 weeks. So that's kind of the main thing from the government's point of view.
Just to kind of add to that a little bit, like, it seems to me the way that I've seen Scott Morrison talking about this is he's kind of holding these things up as like, we need to have these before we can lift restrictions.
Mm.
And it seems very much like they're leading into like, well, if you guys don't download the app and give us all your data, then I'm not sure that we're going to be able to let you out to see your friends again. And it's hard to say exactly how it's going to go at this stage, but like, definitely the way that this is being framed by the government is like a very carrot stick kind of situation. Mm. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how that kind of plays out and whether or not they plan to lean on the app super hard. But I guess we'll find out.
Cool. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about is rent relief. And this is sort of a broadish story. It's been going on, and you know, there's been a lot of talk about rent strikes and that kind of thing, and the various governments have been talking about and making plans for this. So I just wanted to run over a little bit about what's going on in terms of various policies to help renters and also landlords. So for a couple of weeks, the federal government was like, oh, maybe we're going to do something, blah, blah, blah. We're going to have this 6-month ban on evictions. But this week, they formally handed that job over to the state. So it's not going to be legislated at a federal level. So all of the states are going to introduce some kind of heavy quotes here, ban on evictions, and about half of them are already implemented. And most of the states are also implementing a mechanism to prevent rent increases, or to disincentivize them at least. And those are mostly like tax cuts for landlords who don't increase rent.
Cool. Great.
Yeah, that's the best way to deal with that I can think of. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the main thing is these quote-unquote bans. And the bans on eviction are actually just a requirement to negotiate. So the laws are things like a landlord must negotiate with tenants who say that they're having trouble paying rent. And according to Tamara Spence, who's the managing solicitor of the Darwin Community Legal Service, in some cases, evictions are already being fast-tracked to get through before new anti-eviction laws come into place. And she says, tenants in financial trouble are urged to negotiate a rent reduction with their landlords, but there's no plan B for if the landlord refuses. And we've definitely seen this, at least anecdotally, on Auspol shitposting, and you know, Tom Tanuki has been posting screenshots of emails that have been sent to people from their landlords, you know, people contacting the landlords saying, hey, I've lost all my work and I'm having trouble. And the landlords are telling them shit like, oh, cool, yeah, well, you might want to consider where you're going to live when you get evicted, or if you can draw down your super. So, yeah, there's no excuse not to pay rent, so just fucking get over it, okay? And the legislation that's being implemented in the states is basically not going to stop that happening. And one exception is in Tasmania, and they have passed pretty good anti-eviction laws. The laws basically say all eviction notices and like rental arrears notices are null and void for 120 days, and that might end up being extended. So that's pretty sweet. Yeah, so and any rent not paid during this ban, you know, quote unquote, during this ban period, will be accrued as debt. So it's not like people don't have to pay it. It's just going to be debt that they can
it's
be
not
evicted
a rent
for.
Freeze.
No, yeah. No, it's not. It's just that you can't be evicted for arrears until after this period is done.
And yeah, as soon as the hammer drops, thousands of people getting kicked out of their homes.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, this is very indicative of the way that the government has been approaching the crisis with their like stimulus packages and bailouts and new plans and that kind of thing, which is basically we're just going to put everything on hold for a couple of months, and then as soon as Corona is all gone, everything's going to go straight back to normal.
Yeah.
So we're not going to do anything crazy like say that you don't have to pay rent for a couple of months. We'll just say, okay, maybe you can't get kicked out of your home, but we're not going to do anything material because that's going to be way harder to reverse later. Yep. And of course, we don't want to make any permanent changes. all we want to do is get ride this ride out this rough patch and then go back to our perfectly functioning and perfectly equitable society that we existed in before.
Totally.
It's great.
And in theory, the debt that's accrued won't be, like, people will be able to, like, leave it and not pay it if they don't have work after the end of this period. In most states, they're not all. But in theory, they won't have any kind of black mark against them. But as we know, landlords have private blacklists that are 100% going to be updated with these people in these situations. So regardless of what the government says, people who don't pay rent will be left with a black mark after this. I don't want to go through state by state because it's a bit complex and boring, but I will post a link in the show notes to an article by Daniel Ziffer. And you can read that if you want more stuff. Cool. So yeah,
we haven't talked much about like rent strike and that kind of thing yet.
No, we do want to get to it, but it's complex.
It's really complicated, and I think we need to iron out our own thoughts about it before we sort of dive in, or maybe even speak to someone who knows more than we do.
Yeah,
this could be a smart
idea. We should do
idea.
More often. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next up is our First Nations story, Noon.
Yes.
What have you brought for us this week?
Yeah, so this is also corona-related, unfortunately. It's pretty fucking disappointing. On April the 2nd, the Australian Federal Police put out a media release. AFP deploys members to help vulnerable communities from COVID-19. And so they're sending 102 officers to remote communities in the Northern Territory. And the first lot of people who flew into the Northern Territory, like AFP members, were on commercial flights, and those commercial flights had other passengers on board who were then forced into government-mandated two-week quarantine because they either had corona or connected to cases of people who had corona.
So presumably all of those cops were then told to social isolate and had to go and stay in a little hotel room for 14 days and not have any contact with anyone?
Well, as we know, police aren't human and thus aren't subject to the same diseases as humans. So they weren't quarantined.
Sorry.
They were sent
I
off to
about
a,
that.
A training camp with each other and then to remote communities. And someone from the Northern Territory Police and Fire and Emergency Services, which is like, because it's a territory, not a state, they're all rolled in one body, but basically like a member of the police in the Northern Territory says, and this is an anonymous person said, "I'd be concerned in remote communities to look up and see AFP officers there. They're the biggest risk. And if it gets into communities, it's going to be trouble. The government is bypassing their own safety measures to let them in. The risk is massive. And indeed, future batches of AFP members going to the Northern Territory will be required to quarantine for 14 days. So they like basically acknowledged that they completely fucked this up. But weirdly, there's no press release about it on the AFP website. There's the one about them sending the officers, but not the one about them violating quarantine regulations. So, hey, I don't know what's going on there. Must have
Bit
been an
mystery.
Oversight.
I mean, generally speaking, they're a pretty watertight organization, the AFP.
Uh-huh.
And
willing to
I
acknowledge
I just hope
they
that
make.
We don't talk about anything later in this episode that proves me immediately wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so that's...
That's fucked.
Yep, it's pretty awful. And I just wanted to say there's a similar thing going on with fly-in, fly-out miners being flown into sites near remote communities. Is a bit of a problem going on. No sort of super detail on that story just at the moment. But yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge it's not only the AFP who are making this fucked decision. It's also mining companies and others.
Very upsetting. I really hope that there aren't serious consequences from that. That would just be awful.
All right. For something else awful, why don't we move on to our
shitpost of the week?
And this time we have a shitpost layup assist from John Rye Sweeten. So thanks, John. Valued member of the community. Love having you on Ozpol. Thank you for this cromulent meme that you shared with us. Not one that John made. Which is pretty apparent.
Hence the layup assist.
Yes, yeah. And normally we give layup assists to people who share tweets or that sort of thing. But this one is a full-on shit post.
So good. It's so detailed.
It's so detailed. So this is a an image of a Fruit Loops box. But above it, it says, "If the Greens came in a box." And it says... and then the Fruit Loops box has been like heavily, heavily photoshopped with varying degree of skill. So up the top it says the un-Australian Greens in a like very badly shoehorned in font. There's a hammer and sickle. and a little box saying, "So an Australian, you won't believe they're not ISIS." And then instead of the actual Fruit Loops on the box are just the heads of Greens members.
It's many a of big, them multiple milky, times. Big milky bowl full of just the disembodied heads of little Greens. But what's so great about it is that they've really like attempted to put some perspective on all yes. elements of the box here. So as a bunch of the faces have been like distorted. Yeah, the perspective on the side of the box. Someone has really sweated over this shitpost, like
as
for
someone
a number
who's made
of hours.
Many similar memes. I actually made a pretty similar cereal related one. It takes a long time to make a meme this bad. So
yeah, they've gone and found all the photos. They've cut out all the heads. They've copied and pasted them, and yeah, they're so good. The way that the little like Sarah Hansen Young is like flying out of the bowl. Like it always is on cereal, like boxes when you pour in the milk and half the cereal just like shoots out the other side, because that's how everybody loves to consume their action cereal in the morning. The other thing I love about this is that, like, he's just who made this meme.
Plausibly not a man, but it does seem likely that it probably was.
It could possibly be not a man. But they've just added the little un-Australian Greens sign like above the Fruit Loops logo. Like yeah. really it should the logo of the box should be the un-Australian Greens. So anyway, look, there's a lot going on here. You definitely need to come and see this meme. Well, it's probably the image that we're gonna post with this episode. So
something
you can check
that
it
we
out
just
there.
Wanted to touch on in a non-shitpost related news about this is that this week, as many people will know, the Greens have started voting on how they're going to choose leaders. And
right after they chose their leader using the old system.
Yes. Curious. Yeah.
So there was a little like online plebiscite that basically sent out an email to all of their members, which, full disclosure, I became one like a month ago, partially in advance of this happening. And basically there are three relatively confusing questions.
Yeah, they're so unclear. Someone posted an image of the ballot on Facebook, and someone commented being like, "What are the questions here?" And like the questions were written in the image, but you couldn't tell.
It's very funny. But basically, it's asking members to decide, should the Greens leader be decided by only MPs, or should it be decided by the members of the party, i.e. should every member get one vote? We're not going to get into it in too much detail here. There's been a bit of a public shit fight between current and former Greens about this.
Yep.
Bob Brown put out an opinion piece saying, "Please don't shut the party room out of leadership decisions," which, you're not getting shut out, bro. You get the same vote as everybody else.
Yeah.
So maybe sit the fuck down. Maureen Faruqi is one of the Greens who came out in support, hard support of the one member, one vote system. So props to her, fast becoming my favorite member of my potentially least hated political party, though the bar is low in Australia.
As regular listeners will know, I have a love-hate relationship with Left Renewal, Renewal, Renewal. And one of the things that I love is their like constant use of the phrase "doing politics differently" when the Greens do bullshit political shenanigans. And yeah, this has been a great example of that this week. But anyway, yeah, so we'll have more news about that as the results come in. Anyway, thank you, John, for the meme. That's lovely.
Yeah, highly entertaining stuff. Love of some blood, sweat, and tears in a meme. All right, it's time for our mains. We're having soft serve surveillance.
Delicious.
Not really a pun, but it's, you know, it's alliterative. So this is kind of a follow-up, I guess, to something that we talked about last year.
In June.
When it was happening.
Time,
so this, I think so, yeah. So this is about the Annika Smethurst situation. So she's a News Corp journo whose home was raided by the AFP in the middle of last year, and they were looking for the source of a story that she'd published the year before that about the Australian Signals Directorate, or ASD.
Who are basically our overseas spy agency.
Yeah, people who do a bunch, like, it's a lot of, like, cybercrime and that kind of thing, and trying, you know, intercepting communications. That's kind of their job. And so Smethurst in 2018 had published a story about proposed new powers for the ASD to spy on Australian citizens, which they currently cannot do. It's very, like, they have a very direct remit. It's only overseas stuff that they're supposed to be doing. Their motto, in fact, is reveal their secrets, protect our own, which is pretty funny.
Cool.
So her home got raided last year by the AFP looking for the source, basically, of this leaked thing. And Smethurst pretty quickly took up a legal challenge against this raid. And the High Court has just handed down their decision about a year later. So they basically ruled that the raid was illegal and they ordered the AFP to pay costs. But they didn't declare that the material seized, so the stuff that basically they got off Smethurst's phone when they raided her, they didn't say that that material had to be destroyed. And in fact, the cops can use it in a future prosecution. So that material that they seized and evidence is still in their hands and may still potentially lead to legal prosecutions against Smethurst and or her source, which is pretty fucked.
Yep. And the court found that the raid was that the warrant that they used to make the raid was invalid, but it wasn't for any it wasn't for a higher principle. It wasn't like you shouldn't raid journalists because, or try to find out who their sources are because that's a fundamental component of an open democracy or whatever. It was just that the AFP had written the warrant wrong, and they'd kind of not been super clear about what they were looking for or what laws they thought had been broken. And so it was sort of like on a technicality. And there was a really good interview that I heard with Peter Grester, who listeners may remember was like imprisoned in an Egyptian jail for doing journalism for years and years and was like a big international like focus of press freedom stuff. And so he since then has become like an ambassador for press freedom. And he was interviewed on Radio National Drive earlier this week. And he said that when he saw this judgment, he was initially really excited that it had been found that this raid was illegal and the warrant was invalid. But he said that looking at it closer, it didn't give him any comfort at all. And the main reason for that was this issue about a higher principle. And it didn't. And also that, as Zach said, this decision didn't protect the sources, which is the main kind of like issue with journalists being raided. It's not like that her story that she'd written might be found. It's the people who had told her shit that might be found.
And they were trying to find her source. That was the purpose of the raid. Yeah.
And we've seen the same thing with like Bernard Cleary and Witness K and the Afghanistan war crimes and all of these sorts of things, that there's this like ongoing attempt by police and military and courts to erode the safety of journalists and their sources.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is being led from the front by Peter Dutton, absolutely. And you mentioned Afghanistan. The ABC was raided in the same week as Smethurst. So just extremely fucking ham-fisted intimidation tactics from the AFP on this, which is, you know, like, as you say, it's a press freedom issue, and that's what it's come down to. But just before we move on from talking about the High Court judgment specifically and more onto the general press freedom stuff, I just want to read this quote from the AFP commissioner in response to this, which I just thought was really telling. He said, in reference to the court basically saying that the evidence had been illegally gotten by the cops, he said, there's a difference between illegally obtaining evidence and admissible evidence. And that's a question we have asked our in-house legal team.
Yeah, so, I mean, most cool of my legal training cool has come from action movies, I was going to say. Sorry to interrupt. and as I understand it from action movies, if the warrant is illegal, they can't then use any evidence that have been obtained with that. But, you know, as I say, maybe that's not the case, especially when you have super fucked courts that don't give a fuck about journalism.
Oh, well, who knows more? You, who have watched at least two
several
action
movies.
Films.
or the in-house legal team of the Australian
Federal
Police.
In the low teens number of movies. Yeah, well, the commissioner of an organization that just literally illegally got evidence the other day, Noon. So think about that.
That's a good point. I'm not actually sure. Like, even with your snarky remark, I don't know which one is doing better. So, anyway, please continue with your real facts, Zach.
I've got a few more facts. Let's see here. What other facts have we got? So, when we talked about this last, it was we were kind of focusing on the media's response to this. So there was a bit of an activist campaign basically being like, stop fucking with press freedom and trying to find sources. Isn't it so nice that everybody in the media can come together and say, no, we're not going to stand for this anymore.
And they had and all of they, those like ads that were articles where most of the words had been redacted, except ones that were like the -- government is stealing your secrets.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, these were in response to the Smethurst and ABC raids. And basically the only major outcome that I can see that they got was that there has been a new requirement put in place that prosecutors need to get the Attorney General's consent before they can prosecute journalists. But of course, you know... The Attorney General is not like an apolitical or objective appointment. And at the moment, it's fucking Christian Porter. So, but Porter has said that he is, quote, seriously disinclined to prosecute journos. And he hasn't ruled it out, which obviously means that he is more than fucking happy to do it if the right case comes along. And specifically in the Smethurst case, he argued against the destruction of the materials that the AFP got, because he said it may well be important for future prosecution. So he doesn't give a fuck about...
No, clearly not. Not in the slightest.
Yeah, absolutely not. So, look, that campaign, as far as I can tell, has stopped now.
It's seriously like, petered out. Yeah, it was going for like a month and a half. And I was trying to find which episode it was last year when we predicted exactly that this would happen, that it would like go on for 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month, and that then nothing would happen and the journalists would all kind of like forget about it and there would be no public outcry or like support or any kind of action. And lo and behold, here we are a year later and it's completely fucking stopped and everyone's forgotten about it. So
yeah, and the tricky and annoying thing about a finding like this from the High Court is that the headline sort of reads like Smethurst won, and it is like a small victory, but it, as you say, it's a technicality and doesn't provide any kind of precedence, I guess, for other cases. And it definitely, yeah.
And
as
according
you say,
to Peter Grester, it might actually be a precedent that makes it worse for journalists.
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty disappointing, obviously. But the other thing I wanted to talk about in regards to this was that Smethurst's original story has basically been proven correct by Peter Dutton since then. So he, like, publicly called it nonsense. As I mentioned before, but just to go over it again, she released this story basically saying that there was a plan to give the ASD powers to spy on Australian citizens, so to do domestic spying. And Dutton has like, called it nonsense and then keeps on just saying that he wants to do it.
Yeah.
The hardest evidence we have of this was in February when he actively confirmed that he's looking at expanding the ASD's powers to spy on Australians, specifically to try and find child sex offenders in Australia. So that is the way that Dutton and also Morrison, who's gotten involved in this debate publicly, have been framing this. That basically we need to do this in order to stop child sex offenders. And
but also it's not true that we're trying to do it. We're not trying to do it, but we do want to do it and we have to do it. It's not on the plan. Yeah, it's not a plan, but we are definitely trying to make it happen.
We're definitely not doing it, even though Dutton has said at separate occasions, A, that we need a sensible discussion about domestic surveillance, and also that we need to have, quote, a public debate about domestic surveillance.
Well, presumably not too public, obviously, but no.
No, just public enough for me to get it over the line. Like Smethurst, in response to this, has said, you know, just because my story is correct, it doesn't change the fact that prosecution has not been ruled out for myself and those two journalists at the ABC who were subject to that other raid.
And presumably until we have the widespread sources.
Yes, exactly. Until we have widespread reform, there really is no assurance that we can have that we won't be prosecuted. So it's not even material, basically, that like she was given good information. And in fact, that's probably, from the government and Dutton's perspective, worse.
Yeah, and something that's interesting in this whole thing is that there's, for journalists often have, you know, a truth defense and also a public interest defense. Those are two really important things for journalists. Mm. And I think that's something that Smethurst and Gresta and everyone else has been kind of pushing, is like, regardless of what you think about the issue, this is clearly in the public interest that the public need to know that the ASD might be spying on them or might be thinking about spying on them, and also that it's true. And both of those are like important defenses for journalists. But I just wanted to say, you know, in that quote from Smethurst you just read, you said, until we have widespread reform, there's really no assurance that we can have that we won't be prosecuted. And I just wanted to mention, again, from this interview with Peter Gresta, that he is basically proposing a law which says that judges have to consider whether there's a press freedom issue when they make decisions. And so that would mean that in basically any court case, for any circumstances, the judge has to ask themselves, is this a journalist? Is this a press freedom issue? And if so, I need to treat this differently. Because at the moment, all of the press freedom laws are like piecemeal and subject to different sort of circumstances and so on.
Mm. But yeah, I guess, as we mentioned, it seems like it's going to be hard to get any kind of critical mass behind supporting reforms like that, because, you know, this case is going to, I mean, it's going to continue. It's not over, but I imagine the sort of public awareness and support around it is probably going to have a little bit of the wind taken out of its sails after this announcement. But that's kind of ongoing, and we think it's a very important story, and we'll keep up to date with it. Not just the press freedom stuff, but also the original story that Smethurst was reporting on.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, Noon, the government is looking at potentially bringing in new surveillance and tracking powers to try and stop the spread of COVID-19.
Mm.
And, you know,
this could be such an easy way to sneak in this, like, changes to the ASD or whatever else it is that they could decide that this is the time to slip it in.
Absolutely. A crisis is the perfect time to install new rules to give yourself more power. So that's very cool. And we'll definitely keep an eye on it as it develops. Cool. All right. I think we'll probably move on now. We've got a little positivity corner potluck. We asked for some submissions, and we finally got one.
It's only 2 weeks later. One nice thing happened to one person who listens to the show over the last fortnight. So that's
which is
good.
Nice to know. Yeah, I'm glad that it happened. I've developed an elegant new sting that's both Positivity Corner and Potluck. I'm just going to play that now.
Potluck, where you bring the snacks.
Yeah, so here's that potluck.
There are theorists that believe that sadness is an evolutionary tool, and like crying and that kind of thing is a mechanism for releasing tension, a therapeutic measure. I kind of feel like isolation is sort of like I'm going through that kind of process where I'm sort of forced to slow down and to reflect. And I mean, cry a lot, not really, sort of. But like, I think this is actually good for a lot of us who are so wound up in sort of like the capitalist rat race sort of situation, that we can actually pause and reflect and really assess what's really important in our lives. And like, is it having a job that pays us a ridiculous amount of money, or is it our community, and is it mutual aid, which is, you know, anarchy. So cool, do that more. But like, I think we really need to reassess what's important to us, and I think this is a great time to do it.
Ah, that's a very nice angle on it, yeah. I think that's definitely true in a lot of different ways about people realizing what's important to them, partly because some of it's not happening and partly because some of it's happening more, you know. I've been working on skills that I've been wanting to work on for ages and, you know, going out of my way to call people and connect to people who I, you know, see only very occasionally. And yeah, that's I like that.
Yeah, I think it echoes a sentiment that Lazy Susan was talking about at the end of our interview a couple of weeks ago. And she was saying that she actually really appreciated the opportunity to have more time with her family. And yeah, I think giving people the opportunity to like not have to spend as much time on work, in some cases, obviously this isn't universal, But for some people, the you know these restrictions are kind of playing out that way. Yeah, I mean, it's
giving, as we talked about. Sorry,
go on.
I was going to say, as we talked about in that Inventing the Future UBI sort of one a couple of weeks ago as well, like, yeah, I think a lot of people are discovering that work or whatever their jobs are doesn't have to be done in the way that they've been doing it for the last 5-10 years or whatever, that these structures are kind of like hangovers from a long time ago and that there are much better ways that we can organize our work and our lives and our social lives now. So, yeah, I think that there's definitely some positivity to be found in the idea of people realizing what's important and what they'd want and need. And yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it could potentially provide some much needed momentum to keep organizing around these things when the crisis is not as acute as well.
Mm.
So I think there could be some potential long-term positivity corners out of this as well.
If you have had something nice happen to you in the last fortnight, or if you want to tell us about something that you have strong feelings about, you can send us a positivity corner and or potluck. Just record yourself speaking for a minute or less and email it to us at ospolsnackpod@gmail.com. And we always really love it when we get submissions. So, yeah, please send them in. We love it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you very much to our anonymous potlucker this week.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it a lot. Cool. Okay, I reckon that'll probably do us for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you so much to everybody who has signed up to our Patreon over the last few months.
Yeah, it's been so many. It's so lovely.
It's been huge for us to get that amount of support. And yeah, we're putting out those special Marxist meme episodes as soon as we can in order to say thanks. And those will be available for everybody as well. The other thing we were going to mention was that this week is bonus episode week, so if you sign up to our Patreon for $1 a month, you get a monthly bonus episode plus access to our Discord, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff as well you can get. But this month, we're going to release our bonus episode for free for everybody. It's going to be another Corona-related thing, so if you want to hear more Corona analysis, we'll be putting that out midweek, and you'll be able to listen to it over on our Patreon, and we'll post up links in the Facebook group and on our various socials, which, by the way, you should follow us on if you're not already doing that.
We got Insta, we got Twitter, we got Facebook. I think that's it.
Yeah, we don't have TikTok.
No, or Google Plus.
No, or Hinge, but, well, you know, we're getting there.
All right. I think we're done.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. I hope you stay safe and well, and we'll catch you next week. Make sure that you keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.